You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Kent Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Hayden Durup. It still feels unimaginable to think that Wild Beasts are gone. They were a band that did everything their own way and never once tried to follow the trends that were around them. Thankfully for us, ex-Wild Beasts frontman Hayden Durup is back, this time with a beautiful solo album called Diviner, which is out now. The album will resonate with anyone who held a firm love for his old band while also surprising new listeners, especially the ones who will have absolutely no context for the band. Throughout Diviner, his vocals are intimately reflective, his words are disarmingly tender, and the music itself proves that he still has that sonic curiosity within him. I got to catch up with Hayden on a recent trip to the States where he found himself playing the most intimate rooms of his entire career, which was the perfect showcasing he could have ever hoped for Diviner. This is the 405 Exchange with Hayden Durup. Enjoy.
I'm a keeper of secrets.
So, welcome back to New York.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, what's cool about having you back here is I feel like this is a place that's held a bit of history for Wild Beasts. I think the first time I saw you guys live was at the Highline Ballroom. I want to say that was maybe 2010 or 11.
10?
Yeah. I know it's a bit of a general way to start a conversation, but I'm actually genuinely curious. Like, how does it feel like for you to be back here? I mean, just before we hit the recorder, we're chatting about, you know, times you spent here, like, how does it feel returning to a place that you're quite familiar with?
Well, you do find memory orbits itself, and especially in the kind of migration routes of musicians. Obviously, you come through New York in a lifetime quite often. I love being here. It's a sensibility that I think just is very empowering, and I don't know, it's... I'm creating new memories here, and differently, having been in the band before, like you said, you kind of create collective memories, but now, on my own, the memories are different. They're more sense memories, because when you're in a, a lot of your memories are formed with other people.
Yeah.
And this time, you know, it's slightly different, but I'm really loving being here.
That's very good. Well, thanks for such a good answer and such a very standard question. I appreciate that. I know you've been asked a lot about the end of Wild Beasts, but I kind of want to ask you something very specific in that regard. With the last Wild Beasts album, Boy King, you took on a bit of a character, one that was a bit more boisterous and playful in a much more typical macho way. I found myself really enjoying that musically and just the overall presentation. I thought that was really interesting. But my question is, what was it like to come out of that? Like, was it like flicking a switch, or did it take some time? Because, I mean, when you tour, even though it's a thing of repetition, you do find yourself kind of embodying the way you're existing. So what was that like finishing that run? And
well, I mean, I'm of the belief that we are all many people. We are within us multiple people. We are just the person we are according to the correlation of company and location. So I was just the person I was at that moment according to the requirements of... who I was around and who I was to myself, and that was a... So I would say within that time I had a lot of fun, maybe being that bolder character, but ultimately, I in honesty, learned that that isn't a shape that I can hold. It's a kind of a stress position.
Really?
And over time... Yeah, over time I kind of recoiled into something a bit softer. But if you make music, you make it to serve you, and at the time, the herniated ego I was suffering from.
I like how you put that. You know, something that I thought was kind of interesting, and I imagine you as the artist, you always find people's reactions to things kind of like interesting. Because, I mean, otherwise, why would you put art out there? I wonder, like, when you were within that type of position, did it surprise you how surprised people were? Like, kind of like how people found their heads turning in a kind of general way?
Yeah, I mean, the art of confusion and surprise is one that I totally relish and love. I mean, I love confounding, and I actually think it's my responsibility. I think it's any creator's responsibility to kind of put it out there a little bit, and the currency is that risk. The currency is the self made vulnerable. So I think it was a funny time, because the character and the response artistically was pre kind of re-emergence of the right politically and kind of societally, and it's almost as if the response was made without thinking that it would ever eventually become the norm, you know, in terms of the kind of the kind of aggressive male attitude, I guess.
It's actually interesting to hear you say that. I don't want to put words in your mouth at all, but I think what was so enjoyable for me with that album as a fan of your band was how opposite it's what we would expect, but how obvious it was, at least to me as a listener, of it being a character. But I think there is something interesting to what you're saying about, like, you know, you can relish within the absurdity of it when it doesn't correlate as a reflection of what's existing on the world.
Exactly that. You know, I mean, the only difference between, like, a fantasist and a successful musician are the minds of the listeners.
I love that.
You know?
It's like, so true.
Yeah, like, I'm a total... And that was my fantasy, and it played out, and I got to write myself into existence in that sense, and of course, like, I carry frontman angst. Of course I want to be the leather-jacketed, tight-jeaned, kind of cucumber-down-the-trousers kind of... you know, it's not beyond me, but also... In a strange way, that character was my truth. And sometimes we do have to migrate into shapes to know what our shape is.
Yeah, because in a lot of ways, if we can't embody different facets of shapes and personalities, how can we ever learn what we want to be and what we don't want to be?
Exactly. And I think we're society really for the purposes of being obedient, good workers, really values consistency and stability.
Yeah.
So I can understand why there was some antagonism towards the fact that when people reached for their dose of Wild Beasts, it didn't quite serve what they had come to. And as a fan of musicians in the world, I can understand how that would kind of happen, but. I think the makings of my favourite musicians have always been their more absurd records, you know.
Yeah. That's the element of daring and even just willing to be playful.
Yeah, totally. And I think myself so fortunate that I get to have that level of bandwidth as a human being in this world, that today I'm this guy, and therefore I am that guy.
Yeah. Well, that's what really excites me about getting to chat with you today, because you have a new record out, and I feel like with the things I've been reading about it, the way you've been talking about it, I feel like you're in a space now where you're very much pensive and reflective about who you are today, and I think that's also reflective from the record. I'd love to start asking you about the music off the record, particularly, you know, this is the first post-Wild Beast music we've heard from you. And I think what's amazing is the title track, Diviner. I mean, talking about, I brought up all the stuff we did just now about Boy King, because I really wanted to go within this track, which I feel is like as opposite as you could have gotten in regards to that character, that posturing, and that kind of general mood. And I wonder, like, do you feel like part of this was made in reaction to experiencing that? And I'd also love to hear about how it was made, Diviner particularly, the title track.
I think it was an impulsive response to the figure I had been. What was so interesting about the end of Wild Beast as a band was that it was a gas guzzler psychologically as a frontman, because it took such front and such presence to bring that record, and for it to be believable meant I had to be that figure.
Yeah.
In a sense, I was method acting the frontman. But I guess this record was made in the space between the self within and the external frontman. And yeah, that is a sense was the inner divination. Which direction do I go in? Do I inhabit this skin fully, or do I actually do something which felt kind of murky, which was to not know fundamentally who I am, because I've been in a band since I was 15. And in that sense, you do cryogenically freeze parts of your personality, because you are serving a greater purpose than you. That is the requirement of the band. And once on the outside of that, there was some thawing to do. And which made for good fodder for writing, I guess.
Yeah.
And what better response to a kind of inward, what a better response to an explosion within a musical life than music, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think what echoes so much of what you're saying within the music, and, you know, thinking about that tidbit you just said there about touring since we were, you know, making music and touring since we were like 15, it's like, when you consider that and just consider what that life does, I mean, to be at this stage in your life, to experience what you've experienced, to do the traveling you've done, and, you know, being on stages and recording, how can you not be pensive? How can you not feel reflective? It's in a lot of ways, this is probably the first time in your life prior to making Diviner where you were able to do that within a very holistic space of time.
Exactly. And holistic is the word. I mean, I guess it's the first time in my life I've made private music. My musical experience previous to that was always public. It was within a family, and then so interestingly, I didn't write from home before, and this record was the first record I wrote entirely at home, because I could bring my work home with me.
Yeah,
and my work was my home, you know.
I love how you said that just now, private music, because what a great I mean, I don't like the idea of putting elevator pitch, that terminology in regards to music as a thing to sell, but if it was a very short way of explaining a concept and a feeling to someone, I think that's very much what I would use, private music. Because listening to the album, when I experienced it, there were moments where I almost felt to myself like, obviously I'm a listener, I'm meant to be experiencing this, but it felt so private, it almost felt like I was eavesdropping on you playing in a room rather than experiencing it through headphones and that.
Well, it's so interesting, isn't it? Because in many ways, the inner workings of a man aren't meant to be heard. I've felt that in some of the kind of responses to the record, is almost a sense of discomfort at how private it is. I think. But, you know,
It's interesting to hear you say that, because just a few days ago, I wasn't thinking of bringing this up, but it's kind of relative to where we are right now. And I very much feel a kinship in what you're saying as a man as well in regards to having feelings and, you know, the act of presenting them. I remember I showed a friend of mine the music, a female friend. I say female because it's relative in the context, but she found herself feeling almost a little uncomfortable with how revealing the music was. And I kind of pressed her on it out of a form of curiosity. And she didn't say it so directly, but what I gauged was the facet of a man being so open with their feelings was almost like it was weird, at least in that, in the context. Like, it was almost like, wow, this is revealing, and I don't know if I've experienced a man being this open about their thoughts and feelings.
Yeah.
But what a perverse thing in a lot of ways, because with the human experience, you would think that's what we should all want. But because, you know, going back to what you're saying about society, we haven't really built a society, at least in Western cultures, where that type of thinking is so widespread, have we?
No. I mean, but that's why music for me is the fundamental human resource of empathy and compassion, and it's the resource to seek solace. You know, where else is so welcoming and so forgiving of the contortions of being human, you know? And also, as, like, I'm an author. It's like, to say these songs are all true to life is, you know, it's a bit extreme, you know?
Yeah.
I've come to understand that, like, my singing and the way I sing, I can't help but sing emotionally. That is my vehicle. That is, for whatever reason, that's how it comes out. I will not live ashamed of that emotionality.
Yeah.
And that in my own way is a quiet protest.
I love that because I think it's very, it rings very true. It rings true to everything we've been discussing. And, you know, going a little backwards, I'm going to ask more about the record, but, you know, there's something that's been stuck in my brain from when you brought up about, you know, particularly the end of Wild Beast in regards to going into doing solo music and making Diviner. I wasn't fortunate enough to attend the last shows that Wild Beast did, but I had some friends who did. And I had friends who said that with experiencing the set list and the presentation, how you were being on stage, that the context of Boy King, within the context of your wider discography as a band, how you were playing them at that point made sense. And I wonder, like, I mean, you've been asked loads about those last shows, but do you feel like the person you were within those last shows played any role into how you approached making this album?
To be honest, the album was pretty much written before those shows happened.
Really?
Yeah. I started writing immediately after we made a decision to not be in the band, and you asked how Diviner, the song, came about. That was the first song written. So we were in Northern England in the town we grew up in, and we were at a local pub and sat down, and just before New Year, 16, 17. So this was December 16, and we made the decision, and then I got on a flight to Los Angeles because I had to suspend winter. I couldn't face the sense of decay that winter brings. I was, you know, so I took myself to the blue skies, perpetual blue skies, and Diviner was a song that emerged, strangely enough, on my birthday, because it was, in truth, a very solitary birthday. I was away from my community, my people, where, you know, I have people in LA, but not the same kind of plug-in. And I think it was also some birthdays you choose to be on your own too, you know, and that was one of those. And I guess the song emerged on that day. And then what passed was 9 months before actually that we were able to tell people publicly that what happened. So within those 9 months, I had written most of the album.
Wow.
And it was made in that sense in secret because I both didn't tell the band or anyone around me, really. Partly because it was working as a methodology and as a writer. You know, if it works, you just don't question it. You just keep making.
Wow.
And as soon as the announcement came, somehow there was a shift in my inner world, outer world synchronicity, and I no longer had that latency. And, you know, it had been written.
But you know what's so fascinating is, like, I've read a little bit about, you know, how the album came to be, but being sat here and hearing you recount it to me, it kind of reframes it in a very particular context with everything we've been discussing, especially when I think about the fact that, you know, you were touring for Boy King, but you had made this album, and, I mean, it kind of goes back to how you start this talk about, like, how as humans we're multifaceted beings, because here you are quite literally, as an example, living that out, and how you did that within making an album such as Boy King, touring it, but knowing that you had an album like Diviner kind of prepared, or at least partially prepared, and you knew that there was this other aspect of your personality you'd be able to exhibit.
I guess so. I mean, to be honest, I'd make the album. Look, this is a strange thing about leading a life that is kind of, the major events in my life are albums, and therefore there's always kind of a relay race between my subconscious and myself in the outer world. And that's the strange sensation that things that I obviously felt and inhabited, places that I inhabited within myself, emerge over time as being kind of quite public knowledge.
It is very strange.
It is it's a strange experience, and I think it's a very fortuitous experience to have that connect, but you do have to hold your nerve within it, you know.
Yeah.
Because your emotional kidney is worn outside your body in some respects, in my practice anyway. You know, unfortunately for me, that is my process.
What you just said there, I was going to say that's a lyric yet to be made right there. About the outer kidney, I kind of like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not sure if Black Sabbath quite had the same level of internal scrutiny that I have to go through, but good on them, you know.
I really want to ask you more about this album that you made, because it is very beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I really found myself loving the tune of Stop Motion. It sounds like one of those tracks that, and I always like looking for these tracks when I experience music, it sounds like it was a very inspiring track to make. Like, you as the creator, while you were making it, it probably left you feeling inspired. What's the story behind this one?
That song I developed in Amsterdam with a good friend of mine who had a little studio in the city, and I took it to Amsterdam to kind of develop with him, and we had this idea outside of Holland is this structure called the Delta Works, which is a huge dam seawall. It's a seawall that keeps the sea back from Holland. It keeps the sea from basically turning Holland into a swamp. And it's such a kind of interesting meditation on human psychology to not admit that the sea eventually will take us. It's to say, no, we can stop this. By grand scheme and by grand will, we can prevent the sea. And in many ways, that was a state I was in myself, was to keeping the sea back. And I guess that's where belief comes in. And unless you believe what you need to believe, these things don't come into being. So Stop Motion as a song developed around those ideas. Again, it's a strange sensation because I did a lot of this writing on my own. It's sense memory. It's not like, oh, then we riffed that idea and then we jumped on this. No, it's kind of like this, it feels like this very still time of me and the piano. I mean, it's a very piano-led song. The piano is in its own way a very collaborative instrument. So you use your left hand, your right hand, your left foot, right foot, and I hope that gives you some insight.
No, it definitely does. And what you just said there at the end, I feel like with Stop Motion, particularly it's a good example of the sensation of listening to this album, where you could very much tell that, I mean, quality-wise, it's generally quite sleek, not in like a big pop way, but it's a very like clean record in terms of how it's put together. Yet there is this element of craftsmanship and patchwork going on, where you could definitely tell, like, you had journeys with these songs where you definitely had ideas later on and went back and put them in. And I wonder, do you feel like that was aspect of having the quality of time? Like,
I think it was. I kind of am a bit of a rewriter.
I think most musicians probably are. They just don't admit it.
No, I think you're right. I mean, for some reason I thought this cow analogy and how a cow has seven stomachs. And
that's a cow has seven stomachs?
Yeah.
Actually, I didn't know that.
That's what it takes to break down the nutrients from the grass. And I guess, you know, ingesting a song is like that. It takes some processing to get to what it... get to the shit.
I just want to state for the record that my lack of knowledge of seven stomachs on a cow is due to the American educational system. You know, in a lot of interviews I read in regards to you making this album, we've talked about this, it's obvious how you are definitely in states of meditation, being reflective and, you know, approaching this work and the way you approach the songwriting. But something I'm very keen to know, and I had this thought immediately after listening to the album, to make such a reflective album, and I kind of want to know this in probably as, not narrow, but as, you know, as almost as literal as a way you could approach it. What do you feel is something you learned about yourself that surprised you strictly from the experience of making the album? Especially when you consider what you said before about albums being, you know, reflections of life experiences. Like, what do you think surprised you about yourself?
I guess, you know, this is a strange sensation, but if you are a creator, there are gaps in your psyche that can only be circumnavigated with the work. And what I became so closely and intimately aware of was that I needed to make the work, that without it I would be really quite useless and maladjusted, you know, that actually it was because I've always made work through compulsion. I didn't know if changing my working scenario would actually leave me without the compulsion to make it, and I tried that out for a while, but then I came to realize, no, my neural balance and the body chemistry works because I write and because I sing. You know, singing is such an essential practice to me, and I think it would be to most people if they had the freedom to sing. That's what I kind of became very aware of. And I guess for any artist, it's a strange sensation to need an external presence within you to satiate your own being, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you need an audience.
I think it's both the gift and the curse of being an artist, because it's like, you never... I feel like something I've garnered from my own experiences and my peers and my colleagues as the other artists is that we always find ourselves thinking that we don't want to be beholden from external factors, but our careers and even just art, if it was a hobby, it demands that. It's a very weird place to be.
You constantly... It's a constant state of being in transplant. You always have other ideas transplanted within you, and you're always offloading your own organs into another.
And trying to make sense of them.
And trying to make sense of them. And Which I guess is a very human way of being.
I think so too. I think what's really beautiful what you just said is that it kind of goes into the facet, because I mean obviously we're talking about creation and creators, but I think the way this could be applied in a more general sense of people who don't create in a traditional sense is that you know, it kind of goes to the aspect of conceptualizing and application. A lot of things that we're discussing, you almost have to find yourself in a place of trying it out to make sense of it, really.
I think you're so right. Yeah.
I only have a couple more questions for you, but, you know, thanks for taking the time to chat.
Of course.
Yeah, I really would love to hear you talk a bit about this piano tour you're doing, because it's very different than any tour you've had the chance to do before. Yeah, just talk to me a bit about how that came together, like the thought process.
Well, I'm playing the shows that feel most vital to me, and I think at this point in my musical life, I should have a bit of craft. So it's a strange blend of showing humility and earnestness in the sense of saying there's no inheritance for people's attention and ears here, you know, and I really feel responsible for being present within that, and not kind of, it's quite an audacious thing to have a solo career. it's a societal taboo, you know, there's a thing I'm kind of dealing with at the moment, is both the societal taboo as now being the solo artist, and also the emotional male solo artist, you know, and kind of the baggage that comes with.
Does that feel like something that's very prominent within, like, a tangible way? Or is it almost like one of those weird unspoken things? From your perspective as an artist.
Well, from my perspective, I guess I've always been an art... I've never functioned as an artist that hasn't had a bit of a bipolar response anyway. I'm really used to that territory of being quite affronting, you know. And I've always thrived of making people make a decision on me. But this time around, it's my name. It's not a kind of company name.
Yeah.
it's not a company expense anymore. It's a personal expense.
Well, it's actually interesting. For the last question I have for you, I'm glad you brought this up, because this is actually something I was kind of keen to touch upon with you. And to be honest, this is actually a bit more of a question for me than for listeners. Though if people are listening, I'm sure they'll find this intriguing and interesting. Something I've always found fascinating with your career and your band is that I love how you use the word affronting, because I feel like for some reason in the way people would discuss Wild Beasts, discuss your songwriting, discuss your singing, people would do it in a way where they felt like they had to have an opinion rather than like enjoying it for what it was. And what I mean by that is that, you know, as a fan of Wild Beasts, I always thought it was interesting the way people would openly interpret your music, because the way it would be written about, whether it be in the press or blogs or even like, you know, tweets or comments, there was always this weird tonality of it being more of a fact rather than opinion. And I feel like it's very peculiar in regards to your bit. See, you're kind of laughing. I think you kind of know what I'm talking about.
I do, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
I've never put my finger on it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because I feel like people would always highlight the elements of masculinity and the playful sexuality within the lyrics, like, you know, the touchstones of that. But again, it's like that aspect of people going like, Wild Beast makes music like this, Wild Beast writes about this, this is what they're talking about. And I guess my question for you is, like, with the band being done, with there being time of you being away from that, do you feel like people ever got what you were trying to do, at least as an artist? Do you feel like, I mean, I guess it's kind of two questions. One, since you kind of know what I'm talking about, what was it like for you to experience that? And two, do you feel like people generally got what your creative output was about?
Yeah, definitely. I think I've had the good fortune of being receiving and being told what that music meant and means to people. You know, I guess I've always felt like what I do is feeling music. I mean, music's there to make you feel. It is the device for feeling. You know, you can't have non-emotional music. I guess it does inhabit a left and right brain space, in that it, I guess, lyrically had an identity,
yeah,
which, you know, people kind of made a call on. But I, you know, for me, it's always just been about a feeling thing, and to make someone feel something.
I feel like that's very prevalent. I don't want to like speak for you at all, but like, you know, I like listen to all your albums and have enjoyed them and seen you live loads, and like I've always felt like what you just said there, the element of feeling, was obvious, because I almost feel like what's interesting with like Wild Beasts is kind of like how you guys were clearly such a smart band, And I don't know if it was in terms of presentation or just different publications or what, but I always used to get a laugh to myself seeing people try to over-intellectualize your music, where obviously the music's smart, but it's like you're saying, it's about a feeling, it's about an emotion.
It is. I mean, yeah, it's, and you know, to even, this is what really amazes me about songs, is to even think of a song without hearing it, but to think of a song aligns your emotionality in such a way as to make you believe something that so you can act upon it. And I guess that's what Divine and my record is about. It's about what I needed to believe in order to go forth.
Otherwise, why share it?
Exactly. So it was both a combination of what I needed to believe, and also when it becomes a public thing, strange way, my own belief system becomes a public insight too. Does that make sense?
It does, and it makes... it makes explicitly, I feel like, a lot of sense to me, because I have the good fortune of having musician friends and traveling and being part of crews. And, you know, I think something that no one ever taught me or told me to be wary of is just the weird sensation of becoming friends with musicians and then seeing how they're written about. Because it's just, I guess it's just a very peculiar thing. It's hard.
Yeah, it is hard. I have to say, it is hard. And in a sense, you have to make your peace with the absurdity of it.
Yeah.
And that's where it comes down to compulsion again, that if you have the compulsion to make, then you are ultimately slave to it, and everything gets behind that.
Yeah. But before I let you run here, I mean this is just a quick one, but you'll be doing a show here in Brooklyn tomorrow, like a tiny studio show. I mean, I'm excited to see it, but are you nervous at all?
I can't wait. Yeah, I don't think there's any need to be nervous. I was nervous on my first show in Paris a couple of weeks ago, but since then, I've found it really life-affirming and nourishing to, like, tomorrow night there won't be a mic, it's just me, and it's to take a mic away from the singer is to remove is to remove all the nuances of presentation, like, you know. But in a way that I love that leveling aspect, and to sing to people, I can't wait to sing to people in the room. Like, they're going to hear me at a human volume. And these are things that we have lost over time that are fundamental to our way of being, you know. The difference now, I mean, on my own, is the intent of the song is so crucial. Like, with a band, the character of the song and the spirit of it is summoned because it's this cocktail of people.
Yeah.
And you always know that's going to be present. But it's when it's just you and a piano, you actually have to just take a moment to be like, what's this supposed to feel like?
It sounds exposing.
Oh, yeah, it is. But that's the currency. That's the good stuff.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Hayden, thanks so much for taking the time
to chat. Pleasure, man. Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Thanks, dude.